Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Slow Burn Media, Evergreen Podcasts, and Killer Podcast presents Who Killed? A podcast that provides a voice for the voiceless.
Both were 65-year-old Stephen Chris, now in the Washington County Jail, indicted by a grand jury this week on two counts of second-degree murder. He's accused of killing 18-year-old Peter Zito Jr. and 16-year-old Donald Bartron in 1974. Both were found shot to death in Beaverton's Oak Hills neighborhood. Peter Zito's sister, Barbara, is grateful for an arrest she says is long overdue.
It's a difficult thing to deal with, to have to accept that, you know, your brother can be murdered this way and there is nobody accountable for it.
Chris was suspected in the murders early on, but ballistics testing of a .22 caliber handgun he had back then didn't match. Chris went on to join the Army and in 1976 used that same handgun to murder his commanding officer at Fort Lewis, Washington. He served 12 years of a 35-year military sentence, eventually ending up back in Washington County. The double murder case here got new life this year when Detective Mark Pavolny took another look.
While reviewing the case file, we decided to take a second look at the ballistic testing, since it had been done nearly 50 years ago.
Modern testing by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms paid off, and the Oregon State Police Crime Lab confirmed the gun used in the Fort Lewis murder was the same one used to kill the two local teenagers in 1974.
To date, this is the oldest known match nationwide the ATF has ever confirmed for a prosecutable case.
Washington County Sheriff Pat Garrett spoke at today's news conference.
I want to acknowledge the loss of your loved ones many years ago and what you've had to endure waiting for today.
And now that the day has come, Peter Zito's sister can't help but look back.
He's just a happy kid. And it was terrible when I heard that he was gone.
And this case is ongoing. Also, detectives are investigating the possibility that Chris may be involved in more homicides. If you have any information that can help, call the Washington County Sheriff's Office. Tim Gordon, KGW News.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Who Killed the Presser of the Week. On this week's episode, we are going to listen to the Washington County Sheriff's Office about a cold case from 1974, a double murder nonetheless. So this is something that's 50 years old at this point, and it's pretty remarkable that they're able to solve this case. So I am under the weather this week, as you can tell by my voice. Thank you very much to the wild and crazy weather here in Denver, going from 70 to, a foot or two of snow outside currently. So this is the way it is this week. I am sorry for the short introduction, but enjoy this press conference. This was a wild and crazy case. Again, a double murder that was unsolved for 50 years until the cold case unit from Washington County Sheriff's Office were able to crack the case. So enjoy.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Sergeant Danny DiPietro. I'm the Communications Sergeant at the Sheriff's Office. We appreciate you all joining us today for this press conference related to the 1974 double homicide. Initially, you're going to hear from Sheriff Pat Garrett, and after that, you'll hear from Detective Mark Pavolny. He's the lead investigator on this case right now. Afterwards, you'll be able to hear from the family member of Paul Zito, in an interview for media who is present on scene. So without waiting any longer, Sheriff Garrett.
Good morning. My name is Pat Garrett, and I'm the Washington County Sheriff. Thank you for joining us today. We are here to announce an arrest in the 1974 murders of Donald Bartron and Peter Zito Jr., two teenagers who were shot and killed in the parking lot of the Oak Hills Recreation Center. I want to recognize one person in particular who is with us today, and that is Peter Zito Jr.'s sister, Barbara. Barbara, thank you very much for being with us. And to Barbara and the entire Bartron and Zito families, I want to acknowledge the loss of your loved ones many years ago and what you've had to endure waiting for today. The Sheriff's Office is committed to investigating every cold case, exhausting all leads, reviewing case details to see if new techniques, new technology might provide new solutions. This work is done by detectives from our Violent Crimes Unit as they have time, in addition to carrying an already very busy caseload. While solving homicides that have grown cold over many years is important to our community and our office, as you can imagine, it's incredibly important to the victims' families. Detectives work to provide closure to these cases whenever possible and to hold individuals accountable who are responsible for these horrific crimes, even decades later. I will now be followed by Detective Mark Pavoni, who is the lead investigator, who will detail the steps taken which resulted in the arrest of the person responsible for Don and Peter's deaths. Mark.
Thank you, Sheriff, and thank you everyone for being here. My name is Mark Pavoni. I'm a detective here at the Washington County Sheriff's Office. Just before 4 a.m. on October 3rd, 1974, an Oregonian newspaper delivery driver reported seeing a person on the ground next to a car parked at the Oak Hills Recreation Center. The first deputy got there in less than 3 minutes. That deputy was Jim Spinden, who later became the elected sheriff of Washington County. Then Deputy Spinden pulled into the parking lot and saw a 1956 Oldsmobile with the hood and trunk open. When he walked up, he saw 18-year-old Peter Zito Jr. lying on the ground next to the driver's door. 16-year-old Donald Bartron had been working on the engine and was slumped over under the open hood. Both teens had been shot multiple times in the head with a .22 caliber gun. Detectives were called out right away and began their investigation. Multiple neighbors said they heard gunshots around 12:30 in the morning. Detectives initially arrested Joseph Amir Wilson. Much of what followed was reported in the news at the time and in follow-up news stories since. Detectives learned Mr. Wilson had been assaulted by someone at the rec center a few hours before the murders and thought he wanted to get even. Detectives suspected Mr. Wilson wanted to kill the person who beat him up and to also kill that person's brother, but instead killed Don and Pete, or Donnie and Pete as their family called them, in a case of mistaken identity. However, Mr. Wilson denied any involvement and no physical evidence ever connected him to these murders. The district attorney dropped charges against Mr. Wilson a few months later. Even while Mr. Wilson was in custody, at least one detective never believed he was responsible for the murders. Detective Jim Welch found out Donnie worked at the Black Angus restaurant with a person named Steve Criss, who had reason to be upset with Donnie and Pete. Steve was 17 years old at the time. In December of 1974, about 2 months after these murders, Deputy Spinden arrested Steve Criss for theft. During that arrest, Deputy Spinden found an illegally concealed .22 caliber handgun in Steve's car. Detective Welch had the gun taken to the crime lab for testing the same day. A few days later, the crime lab reported that gun was not a match to the murder scene, so the sheriff's office eventually returned that gun to Steve Criss. Steve joined the United States Army and was based at Fort Lewis in Washington. On October 8, 1976, Steve murdered his commanding officer, Sergeant Jacob Kim Brown. Steve damaged Sergeant Brown's car and owed him a few hundred dollars. Instead of paying his debt, he shot Sergeant Brown 5 times in the head. He used the same .22 caliber handgun which had been found in his car in December 1974. Steve pled guilty to that murder and was sentenced to 35 years at Fort Leavenworth in Kansas, although he was paroled and released in 1988 after serving just 12 years. While reviewing the case file, we decided to take a second look at the ballistic testing since it had been done nearly 50 years ago. Detective Shannon Wild is my partner on this case, and she has helped extensively, particularly with the ballistics. She submitted ballistic evidence to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives, more commonly known as the ATF. That same day, an ATF supervisor notified Detective Wild there was a presumptive match, showing the gun Steve Criss used to murder Sergeant Brown was in fact the same gun he used to murder Donnie Bartron and Pete Zito Jr. The next step was to confirm that presumptive match, which was done at the Oregon State Police Crime Lab. Lab technicians also confirmed the gun Steve possessed in December 1974 when he was stopped by Deputy Spinden, and then used in the October 1976 murder, was also used to murder Don and Pete. To date, this is the oldest known match nationwide the ATF has ever confirmed for a prosecutable case. Earlier this week, this case was presented to a grand jury in Washington County. The grand jury indicted 65-year-old Stephen Paul Criss for 2 counts of murder in the second degree. On Wednesday, detectives arrested Mr. Criss and lodged him on those charges. Mr. Criss was living in Alloa and had been working in Hillsboro at the time of his arrest. He was arrested without incident near his home. Mr. Criss was taken into custody using the same pair of handcuffs used when Deputy Spinden arrested him in December 1974. Although there are additional facts which led to Mr. Criss's indictment and arrest, because this remains an ongoing investigation, we will not be able to share all of those at this time. A case like this is only solved through the efforts of many people. Thank you to the Oregon State Police Forensic Lab, the ATF, the Pierce County Sheriff's Department in Washington, and the United States Army Criminal Investigation Division. Although Detective Jim Welch passed away more than 10 years ago, I want to acknowledge his work on this case. Detective Welch never believed Joe Wilson was the killer, and he correctly identified Steve Criss as the suspect within weeks of the murders. Detective Welch continued his investigation, even though at the time Joe Wilson had been arrested, indicted, and was in custody. His investigation in 1974 documented and preserved vital evidence, and without his excellent police work, this case would never have been solved. And I've spoken with his family to share our appreciation. Too often our civilian and non-sworn staff also go without the recognition they deserve. I want to personally thank Investigative Support Specialist Julie Thurber. Julie spent many hours helping me organize this case file and the documents collected over 50 years. Without her crucial work, we could never have made sense of what we had and what steps were needed. Similarly, Senior Evidence Officer Kelly Marsden helped me review the evidence and preserve it properly. That allowed us to develop new leads and confirm several others. I also want to recognize Sergeant Jacob Kim Brown's family, as this development is a reminder of their loss. We have made extensive efforts to locate his surviving family members. We have made similar efforts to identify any of Joseph Wilson's family members so we can apologize directly. Although the charges against Mr. Wilson were dropped in January 1975, it is clear he was innocent and should never have been arrested. Mr. Wilson passed away in Portland in 2000. Unfortunately, as both Mr. Wilson and Sergeant Brown have fairly common names, we have so far been unsuccessful in finding their relatives. If anyone is able to connect us with either family, I would ask you to please reach out to me so we can make that connection. Finally, I want to echo Sheriff Garrett's appreciation for the Bartron and Zito families and to Barbara here in person, and acknowledge how difficult it must have been to wait 48 years for this moment. I hope this arrest brings some small measure of comfort and closure for you all. Thank you.
My sincere thanks to Detective Mark Pavoni and the entire Sheriff's Office team and our partners for solving this case. I also want to, on behalf of everyone at the Sheriff's Office, personally apologize to the late Joseph Wilson and his family for Mr. Wilson's wrongful arrest in 1974. I am extremely thankful the charges were dropped before prosecution, but that does not change the fact that he spent several months in jail charged with two murders he did not commit. I also want to recognize former Sheriff's Office deputies, investigators, and leaders who worked on this case going all the way back to that early morning call in 1974. As Detective Pavoni mentioned, their work preserved the possibility for justice in this case. And in fact, justice would not have been possible without their work. Finally, it's worth restating our appreciation and to the Zito and the Bartron families for their patience over these many years, and just recognize the loss that they have suffered. And we just hope that this arrest provides them some peace. I will be followed by Sergeant DiPietro. Thank you.
All right, at this time it concludes our press conference, but we will be taking questions. Please understand this is an open investigation. There are going to be some questions that we're not going to be able to answer, so please understand that.
Has there been a confession?
I don't know.
We're not going to be able to talk about any of the specifics of Mr. Chris's interview just because the court case is still pending.
Are you able to say what led to the argument back then at the Black Angus that led to him shooting both of them?
I don't think we can make a specific connection between an argument and the direct result in the shootings happening. We know that there was an argument that happened at the Black Angus involving Donnie and particularly Donnie and Mr. Chris. Beyond that, making a more specific link, we're not able to do right now.
You said he was arrested without incident. Has he been generally cooperative?
I think I'll just leave it at that there was no other specific incident that resulted in his arrest. That was a cooperative process. There was nothing unique about the arrest itself.
All right. So like I said earlier, we're media who are on scene here. We will have Mr. Zito's sister, family member, available for interviews. So please just come find me, and we can arrange that in another location. If you want a private interview with Detective Pavoni, that's also available as well. So thank you, everyone, for coming out.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Who Killed, the Presser of the Week. I am, again, your host, Bill Huffman, and as you know, I drop new episodes every Friday. Currently, I'm under the weather, so I don't know if I'm going to get one out this week, but this is what I am able to do at this present moment. So I hope you enjoyed learning about that case. Hopefully, we'll have a little bit more in-depth conversation about it going forward. But again, always interesting to hear from those folks. So again, thanks so much for listening. New episodes drop every Friday, and you can follow me on Twitter at BillHuffman3. Until then, as always, stay healthy and be safe.
24 hours ago, I found out the person that I'd been dating and seeing for the last 6 months as a con man.
That is my sister, Emma. Andrew Tonks' lies had been so convincing, she'd invested $300,000 with him. However, the tables were about to turn on Andrew. What he didn't know was that Emma had discovered his real identity. But to get any chance of justice, Emma had to act like it was business as usual. Coming up in this series...
And that's when murder, all this stuff goes through my mind. I'm really, really scared.
I'm assuming Sarah has watched too much Netflix and figures I've been defrauding you. Couldn't be further from the truth.
That's what this was, a real-life story that seems so unbelievable, but it was actually true.
A true story that all starts with one simple swipe to the right. I'm Sarah Ferris.
And I'm Emma Ferris, and this is my story. Conning the Con.
Hi, I'm Sean McCabe.
And I'm Carrie McCabe.
We are, well, married, obviously, but we're also obsessed with the darker side of things.
True crime stories, alien abductions, poltergeists. If it leaves you scratching your head and keeping those lights on at night, we want to hear about it.
That's why we host the podcast, Ain't It Scary, with Sean and Carrie.
Every week, we bring our listeners a true story guaranteed to send chills down your spine. From history's most brutal serial killers to the mystery of spontaneous human combustion.
Yep, lots of these stories leave unanswered questions behind, and you'll get to poke through the rubble of the evidence with a hardened skeptic and...
someone whose mind is more open to fun.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
You can find Ain't It Scary with Sean and Carrie wherever you get your podcasts. And on social media at Ain't It Scary. Come play with us.